Hello and welcome to CIFAR Sounding. I'm your host, Simba Wiltz.
And I'm Asla Gonser.
CIFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of the big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CIFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
You can find out more about us on our website at cflar.org.
We're also on social media. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/cflar and on Twitter at cflarbigcats.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/CFL Animal Reserve. We're going to continue our discussion this week to talk more about tickle, laughter, and humor, all the wonderful things that we all enjoy, and also the other animals enjoy as well. We left off last week talking about play fighting. There are some studies that show that human laughter actually evolved from the panting of great apes, and that whole idea of panting was there so that the other apes that were part of the play fighting would know that it's all in fun and that they're not in danger. So panting actually was a method for them to know that, hey, this is just play fighting, and that over time evolved into laughter. Now, there was actually a psychologist, Marina Davila Ross from Portsmouth University, that did a study analyzing the panting of different non-human primates and compared that with human laughter. And there was actually, under spectrograph, they were able to actually compare and showed that the panting style and the laughter comparisons are very similar for those non-human primates that are closer to us. For example, chimps and bonobos are closer to us in the evolutionary tree, and their panting is a lot more like our laughter than, say, the panting of a gorilla or an orangutan, which is a little bit further from us. And the thought is that our human ability to talk is what changed those panting patterns into more of what we consider laughter. And often, you know, when you hear a chimpanzee laughing, it's kind of a taking in breath, exhaling, and it's a little bit of a squealing type of sound that we don't necessarily associate with laughter, but for them is that laughter sound. Another study that was done was a spectral analysis of bonobo baby monkeys, and they were tickling the baby monkeys, and they compared that with a spectral analysis with tickling a human baby, and found that the patterns are very much the same, not only in the sounds they make, but also in the facial expressions that they make, which I thought was very interesting.
I could see where this would be really important if you are trying to have a social interaction with another member of your troop. Then you don't want the playmate's mother or father to come rushing over and violently break you off if they are thinking that there's an actual attack going on. It's really a remarkable sophistication to think about it being a way to lower the appearance of aggressiveness to those who are not participating in the play, both a way of telling them that we're playing, but also giving status to the one that you're playing with.
Now, of course, with the big cats, playing together is also very important.
Extremely important. And they don't generally make those kinds of vocalizations during the process of play until one is falling under tremendous disadvantage. And usually at that point, it's more of a warding off noise. A great example might be if you've got two cubs that are rearing up on their hind paws and swatting at each other. That will generally be a pretty quiet affair as long as they're both playing. However, at the point when one of them is done, has had enough, then usually they will take a more submissive pose and vocalize quite a bit to let their playmate know that they've gone too far.
Now, for the big cats, it's actually a good thing to grow up with a enclosure mate and go through those kinds of habits, correct?
Very important, yes, because they do, to a certain degree, have an understanding of what the actions are when they're done to them, and they certainly need to understand when they do those actions themselves. We can't really approximate what it feels like for a cat to be bitten, but if they have an enclosure mate and that enclosure mate jumps on them and bites them and they find that unpleasant, maybe not to the point of panic, oh my gosh, I'm going to die, but they find it unpleasant, then that is beginning to shape their attitudes about how they're going to behave towards their enclosure mates.
So it's actually a higher level of thought even there, that when you feel your enclosure mate biting you and you say, well, that hurts, then you have to make that next step to say, when I bite him, that must hurt him.
That degree of decentralization, that ability for them to think about the consequences more in an abstract as opposed to some kind of concrete piece, that is a higher level of development that we talk about and you see in psychology. In fact, Piaget, one of the great psychologists of our time, actually came up with this as an idea on showing that you've reached a new level of development when you can think in the abstract and you can come up with logical solutions without having concrete data to back it up with. And it's an interesting problem because the concrete data is something that is the mean. That is how we as a species tend to think about the world, is some kind of concretion, and then we test the data against that. However, for us to get to the next level, we really need to be able to get out of that and start thinking in the abstract so that we can come up with new and novel ideas.
Using the evidence that you have to come up with something different based on the evidence without actual concrete knowledge ahead of time.
And even beyond that, using evidence that you don't have tested against a logic to come up with something that doesn't exist.
And of course, that's done in science all the time. There are theories and proofs that things are theorized years and years before they're ever proven.
It's done in science, but it's not really the guts of science, because a theory is like tossing the beacon out into the ether. You toss that beacon out there, and then everybody tries to build a ladder to get to it. And that's actually the fundamental challenge of science, is because they are trying to build this ladder towards these ideas that are hypothetical. But in many cases, most of the science is spent in that microcosm right around the next rung, because we have to move in increments in science. You can't jump. There has to be a logical step from one piece to the other. And hopefully you get to that end, but that is a rare thing.
Going back to how the big cats are thinking, if you're looking at it from that whole concept of they learn from each other, they do have to have at least some level of abstraction to do that.
Which presents quite the interesting psychological challenge, doesn't it?
Yes.
Makes you want to just run out and tickle a tiger.
That sounds a little dangerous to me, but...
Yeah, you'll just take my word for it.
Yes. But I know that when they're putting their paws up against the enclosure side and you're tickling there, obviously you feel a little safer doing that. But I don't know that I want to run and tickle their belly.
No, I imagine that you'll likely end up getting the same response that you get out of a small cat.
That's right. Instant adrenal click in and fight back.
Yeah, they may love it until they realize they don't.
Right. Well, and that hair trigger response on a predator like that may be something they're not able to control right away. They might swipe at you before they realize what they've done.
And for good reason, too. In those societies, especially in those societies, there are very few rational, logical reasons why anything needs to be making contact with their belly. And so yeah. There's a definite survival thing that says you don't just let anyone rub on your belly.
Now, when we talked earlier about the enclosure mates growing up together and they learn from each other about, you know, when I do something and this cat bites me to stop me from doing it, I have to learn to not do that or not do it as hard or as rough. Do they equate that to you as handlers, to where they might actually refrain from biting you knowing that it is a painful experience?
Well, we don't give them the reinforcement that biting us is okay. So if they're biting us, then they're not going to get tickled in response.
Right.
If they're biting us, then we're going to be leaving them alone. We're going to go away. And in many cases, the cats do like our presence. You know, they enjoy the socialization. And if they're doing something that we don't like and we leave, that is telling them that they don't get the pleasure of having us around. For those cats that don't like humans, well, then, you know, they don't care, you know, that is them warning us off, as opposed to a reaction from a cat that actually wants us to stay. And in that way, it's a beautiful communication, because if they behave in an aggressive manner and they didn't mean it, then that means that during the next encounter, they are less likely to behave in that aggressive manner, as long as they have connected the dots. You do this pattern enough times and they will connect the dots.
Well, that's the real question. Do they connect the dots, and how long does that take to really get that?
That's asking the same question of people.
That's true. I mean, obviously we have the same issue with children learning.
I'm sure that there are a couple of people who are cringing in the corner thinking about that one cousin who just couldn't stop tickling them anytime that they met. And they just never figured out that it wasn't a great idea.
That's true. But it seems as we get older, and this is another question I have for you, as we get older, we don't seem to be as ticklish as we were when we were younger. Is that true of the big cats as well, or is there a physiological reason why that is?
Well, for the big cats, it's not quite the same. They don't react as much. Even though the sensation may still be there, the actual will to do something about it may be completely different. Whereas I've seen several cats who have certainly decided that it's a lot easier to tough it out rather than give a reaction. They may be laying there, you know, paws against the fence, sleeping peacefully, and then you might tickle a paw for a little bit. Nothing will move. You won't see them move. Their tail won't twitch or anything, but suddenly the breathing will pick up. You can see them breathing a little harder, a little faster.
So there's a reaction, but different than used to be.
Different than it used to be. You know, they're not going to sit up. They're not going to move. You see that breathing pick up. You know they felt that. You know they felt it. They're just trying to hold it in.
You mentioned earlier with Cheyenne, the cougar, that as you tickle her paws, she does eventually react and move. So clearly there is some response.
But it's all going to be context sensitive. And the bigger the cat, it seems that the less willing that they seem to be to try and move away from things.
So is there a reason why as we get older we don't seem as ticklish?
For humans, well, first off, it's the frequency of contact, and also that we build a whole lot of other things around the act of tickling. In the wild and in simpler societies, like with the primates and whatnot, it's a bonding thing. It's something that's done between members of the same troop, and they just seem to enjoy it as a means of expressing pleasure at having someone's company. However, touch has tremendous taboos for humans. Everybody has their boundaries, and those boundaries that we put up certainly have an impact on what people are experiencing. Now, it also raises a very interesting question on whether or not we are actually getting less ticklish as we get older, or there is a separation from the sensation and the response.
And that's what you were just describing about the big cats, that there's somewhat of a different response.
Right. Maybe you're just as ticklish as you were when you were a kid, but perhaps throughout the course of life and just living, the response to tickle may not be to fall on your side laughing like a maniac. You may instead decide, okay, well, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to try and take it. I'm right. going to pretend that it doesn't exist.
But I still don't want to give you my foot.
A lot of it is gray matter. It's between the ears. And there are people who have certainly claimed to not be ticklish that, under the right set of circumstances, can certainly have that element of surprise that will allow them to experience it the same way.
There's actually evidence that non-human primates, not only do they display some evidence of laughter, but also of humor and cracking jokes as well.
Well, I guess I'll play the skeptical devil's advocate, and you try and convince me that there's actually a sense of humor out there in the animal kingdom.
Well, okay, well, I'll give you a couple of different examples, and we'll see what you think. there's a well-known gorilla named Coco that has been under studies for many, many years and has learned many words. She's actually learned 2,000 words and 1,000 sign languages. So she's able to communicate with her handlers pretty well.
1,000 signs in sign language?
Yes. It's more than I know. So there's humor. How's that? That doesn't impress you, though, does it?
Not tickling my funny bone.
Okay. In any case, Coco was asked by her handlers, "What can you think of that's hard?" She signed back two words. One of them was rock. Makes sense. Rocks are hard. And she also signed back work, which actually is a play on the word hard in the sense that work is hard, not in the same sense that rocks are hard. So that was one example of an interesting play on words kind of humor that Coco was able to exhibit.
Yes, but that play on words assumes that she understood the nature of the pun that she was making between hard work and hard rocks, instead of just associating the fact that her handlers had always used the two phrases in conjunction, saying hard rocks and hard work, and she just abstracted them together.
Well, I suppose that would take a long time to determine the root of that you just brought up. But another case, which is even a better example of Coco's humor, Coco apparently tied her handler's shoelaces together and then signed, "Chase me." So that's kind of funny.
It's funny in that way that kids will do something to try and hurt their playmate and then sit back and laugh at it. That's pretty interesting combination of thoughts to be able to kind of hobble the handler and then figure out to say, okay, now chase me.
It is kind of funny, though.
If she had laughed afterwards, then I would say, okay, that definitely is humor.
Well, she may have laughed. I don't know. The studies I was looking at were online, and it didn't actually mention whether she laughed afterwards or not. Getting to the idea of humor, do you think that the cats try to elicit laughter from you guys as handlers? I mean, they clearly hear you laughing at them. Maybe part of that question is how do they react when you laugh at them? Because there are times that they do something that's funny and you guys laugh. How do they react at that?
Oh, those are good questions. The cats all have fantastic poker faces.
Oh, do they?
Whether or not they enjoy the sound of us laughing, recognizing that everybody has different laughs, they're all different sounds, that's a question that would take a lot more science in order to answer. However, I certainly do believe that the cats have a sense of humor, even if that sense of humor is somewhat reliant on them deciding how much trouble that they're going to get into if they do something that we don't like.
I feel a story coming on.
When I think about a sense of humor, I think about our dear white tiger, Wenaji. Wenaji, when she was younger, she was in an enclosure that we used to tear out the floor and remulch quite frequently before she moved to an area that doesn't require that as much. And Wenaji has always loved fresh mulch, especially that cedar scent. A lot of the cats do. It seems to be something that they like to roll in and rub their faces on and just enjoy to
no
end.
Part of their scent enrichment.
Indeed, as well as enrichment of their enclosure.
Yes.
But there was a time when we were putting the mulch in for Wenaji. We got all the mulch down and we locked up and we were letting her in. And suddenly, as we got in there, we realized that there was a bag that was still left in the enclosure.
And you've already let her back in from the shift into her enclosure.
Right. And so now what we really need to do is we need to get her out of the enclosure again so we can go and get the bag. Well, what Wenaji is, of course, just in seventh heaven. She has already found out that there's fresh mulch, and that means that it's time to roll. So she is on her back, and she is rolling around and pulling the mulch into her chest and holding it like it's just the most wonderful stuff in the world. As we're talking and coaxing, and she has to be wondering, why are these humans still here watching me do this and talking to me? And that's about the point when she notices the bag.
Ah, the bag.
Yes, the bag. And so she sits up, paws flat, belly against the ground, and is now observing this bag.
And the bag is full of mulch, correct?
Yes, it's a full bag of mulch. And So we're looking at her, and now we're getting a little bit more frantic. Okay, Wadaji, really? You know, you can leave it alone. You don't have to do anything with that. And she kind of starts to look at us, and she's got these beautiful blue eyes that suddenly took on a twinkle that is very difficult to describe as she looked from the bag to the people, back to the bag again, and then to the people. And now she's looking at the bag and...
as if she's weighing, how much trouble am I going to get into?
Exactly. She's trying to figure out what is it that they want. And hey, this doesn't really belong in here. And it's at that point that she picks up the bag and we're thinking, oh, great, here it goes. She picked up the bag and realizes that inside the bag is the very stuff that she loves so very much, this mulch.
Right.
And so her eyes get really big at this. And so now she's got a big, heavy bag of mulch that she's playing with, and she's got it up in the air. And then she heads towards her tub.
Oh, no.
So all the tigers have these big tubs. They're big 8-foot round tubs. And they love to splash and they play in them. And they've got drains in the bottom. But these drains are made for water. They are not made for mulch. And the tubs are not made for mulch. So the mere fact that she's headed towards this tub with this bag of mulch is now causing us to say, oh, no, please don't do it. Because if you get in that tub with that mulch bag, it's going to be a mess and it's going to take forever to clean up. So now we're begging, Wenaji, please don't do it. Just don't. Don't go in the tub, whatever you do. And unfortunately, Wenaji takes a look at us, and she's got the bag, and then that tiger twinkle returns to her eyes. And that's when she jumps in the tub with the bag.
So she did look at you first like, should I do this?
She did. And you know what? She wasn't done yet. Because now she's in the tub, standing in the tub, bag is in her mouth. It's not in the tub yet. You know, maybe if we can get her to jump out, maybe the damage will be minimal.
Right.
And we won't have actually this big thing. And so now here we are frantically saying, please, Wenaji, just get out of the tub. It'll be okay. Take the bag with you, because you know that works.
Yeah.
And so she is now got the bag, and the tiger twinkle appears. And the head suddenly starts shaking side to side. And I can remember this. It was like slow motion, like a slow motion train wreck. You just see the mulch flying through the air and her eyes closed. And she's got this giant grin. You see happy teeth, and ears are pointed straight up. And she's shaking this bag and drops it in the tub and then just looks at us. With an open mouth, jaw relaxed, ears forward, as if she is so proud and saying, I did good, didn't I? Before promptly jumping out and walking into the shift.
Which is what you'd been trying to do all along.
Which is what we've been trying to do the whole time.
And now you're stuck cleaning up all the mess.
Right. And so she walks into the shift, you know, little pieces of mulch that are stuck to her coat. And... quietly begins grooming as we close the door and open back up again with a tear so we can start trying to clean out this tub.
It's hard to argue that she didn't do that on purpose.
There was certainly, it's really hard to argue that there wasn't some kind of humor going on there. What that humor is, I'm not terribly sure, but that was definitely some humor going on.
And obviously the timing of it was quite well done.
Yes, and she's not the only one who's done funny things like that. One of the best expression cats we have is Wakua, who has this marvelous expression of surprise. She will get these big eyes will open up really wide, ears will go forward, and her jaw will drop. And a tiger's jaw is like a giant hinge.
Mm-hmm.
So when their jaw drops and it drops really far open, it looks almost cartoonish. because literally it looks like their jaw dropped like a cartoon. You're expecting to hear a big dong as it hits the ground. And so when she gets surprised, she will look around with this surprised expression, jaw dropped way low and head is jerking from side to side as if saying, I can't believe that just happened. But I have a picture of it certainly seared in my mind. And if anybody ever gets the chance to come and visit with Wakua for a while, you'll find that she's got some fantastic expressions.
So what kind of things make her surprised to do that? Is it, but you're saying actual surprise, not in a laughter response or in a funny response.
That's up in the air still.
It's hard to know, right?
It's hard to know. The reason why it comes across as surprise is usually that it's part of her negotiating. For example, she was up on a den and we were going to toss her a chicken and she knew food was coming. She knew food was coming. So she was really excited. The chicken goes up there. She looks at it and then looks back with this open jaw like, what? That's not what I was expecting. I wanted beef. Where's the beef?
That's good. I like that. Where's the beef? So obviously we've seen that there is element of humor, elements of laughter, elements of tickling in these species. Obviously humans have all of that, but plenty of animal species display different aspects of that. But sounds like the big cats do as well.
They do. And of course, we've talked about tigers doing this, but you'll see this, especially with pride behavior, lions will do it, and just across the spectrum. So it's just very interesting to watch these behaviors, and it requires us to speculate a little bit and do a little abstracting to say, okay, well, maybe it's not quite in cut and dry as we thought it was. Maybe there's a little bit more to these interactions than we think. We already know that they make a tremendous number of vocalizations, hundreds if not thousands of sounds that they can make that have been identified. If their vocal language is that broad, then perhaps their physical language is going to be just as broad and could tell us a lot about our own species if we pay close enough attention.
C4 Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
Send us your thoughts. You can get us on email via contact@cflar.org.
Tune in again next week for more discussion. My name is Asla Gonser.
And I'm Simba Wills. Thanks for listening to CFAR Sounding.